25 past 7 on Tuesday night's Arena.
They swept across the land. They did not leave a thing. They did not leave a person, a stone or a tree. They did not leave anything. They did not leave anything. All that's left is sand. All that's left is sand. I remember Father. I remember him. Every minute I remember. Every moment. Now I hate everyone. Now I hate everyone. Before I used to love. Before I used to love. One day thorn shall grow. One day thorn shall grow from their graves. When they return.
I'll Be Waiting from PJ Harvey. Harvey is the subject of a new documentary feature film, A Dog Called Money, made by World Press Photo Award winning photographer Seamus Murphy. This film is a chronicle of trips made by Murphy and Harvey to Afghanistan, Kosovo and Washington DC, and it fueled a new album from Harvey and the film A Dog Called Money for Murphy. Seamus Murphy is with me in studio now. Yeah, I think it's around 2011, between 2011 and 2014 that this all started to come to fruition. Seamus, you travelled to Afghanistan, you travelled to Kosovo and you travelled to Washington DC. Your book A Darkness Visible was very much part of what I suppose put you into contact with PJ, sure. Polly Harvey, yeah. to start out.
Yeah, what happened was I had an exhibition of the book in London in 2008, and she came to see that. She was researching Let England Shake at the time. She was looking at war, looking at history and places like Afghanistan and, you know, conflict zones. Mm. And it spoke to her in some way, and she got in touch with me. So that kick-started a whole relationship that we have now working together.
And The Darkness Visible, had it addressed specific conflicts, or was it a number of conflicts that you had just photographed?
It was Afghanistan. I'd been going to Afghanistan for many years, from 1994 to 2007 was actually Darkness Visible. So that was a body of work very turbulent years in Afghanistan. You know, we saw the civil war, very brutal civil war. It was the rise of the Taliban. 9/11 happened, and then the Americans and the foreign NATO came in. All the change, the attempt at democracy, first election of president, and we know where we are now.
Mm. And PJ Harvey's album "Let England Shake" had. Was that out at the time of the exhibition around the book?
No, she was actually writing it. Yeah, she was researching and writing it. And I think there were scenes from my book that she says the scenes, you know, the photographs were not preaching; they were actually just showing you what was happening in places,
yeah,
and not making judgments. And there was an empathy there. I think that's what spoke to her.
And suddenly then, I think she got quite a surprise when you said, oh yeah, I make films. It's not just still photographs.
Well, the thing is, I wasn't making films. I was shooting some video for a film that was being made about my black and white archive from Afghanistan. And when she heard that, she said, oh, you make films. And I nodded and she said, well, would you want to make some music films for me? I said, sure.
And this was in and around the making of Let England Shake.
Yes, she handed me a demo of Let England Shake, which was very, very stripped back, you know, just guitar and her voice. But I could tell it was amazing, amazing stuff that she was getting about, you know, she was describing places I'd been to and situations I'd been in that she hadn't been, you know, front lines and you know, battlefields. But she was getting it. She was getting something. She'd read a lot of literature on it. She'd read blogs by American soldiers in Iraq. So, you know, the research was very intense.
And what a privilege it must have been. I mean, what was that feeling like when PJ Harvey says to you, look, I have a demo of my upcoming album. It's not finished yet. Here are the stripped back versions. Have a listen.
Yeah. No, it was great. It was great. I mean, I didn't know what to expect. You know, I had no idea what to expect. And at first it was quite, well, this is different. You know, this is, you know, it took a few listens before it sort of, it weren't, you know, wound its way into my head. But it was very, very intriguing.
So there were return trips then planned for you in the case of Afghanistan. And Kosovo, was that somewhere that had been on the plan anyway, or was it something that you came up with together?
I mean, the whole project was you know, we did the letting shake. That seemed to go very well. So we thought, next time, let's do something together from the start. Let's try and do something organic where, you know, maybe I'm filming something and she's standing nearby and she's seeing the same thing and there's some kind of symbiosis. And that was the reasoning behind that. We talked about Kosovo because I'd been there during the war and I'd already sent her some pictures and she'd already been writing poems based on those pictures. So I think out of the blue, 2011, we got an invitation to a film festival in Kosovo to come and do a Q&A on the Let England Shake films. And we thought, this is great. You know, this is too good to miss out.
Yeah.
And we've been talking about doing this project, but we never quite got around to doing it. And then suddenly it was like, well, here's the opportunity to start it.
Tell me about a woman in the film called Zagorka.
Yeah, she was a, you know, it was the festival, film festival's director's brother who was our driver and our guide for a few days. And he said, I know this village, a Serb village near here. It's actually very interesting, you know, abandoned houses. And let's just go up and have a look. Sounds great. Went there and there was this older woman walking around with a bunch of keys and she had the keys of all the houses. And she did this daily route where she'd go around and check on things. But there's nobody there. So it was like a ghost town. And that was fascinating. And Polly obviously, you know, saw this as an interesting story to tell in a song and a poem.
And PJ Harvey herself then, she also was making notes as you went around, which started as meditations, almost like little poems.
Well, in the film, there's what you hear is what's used as the voiceover is not really a voiceover. It's actually the notes that she wrote in her notebook. When I was filming or taking pictures, she was taking these notes. So these are the first draft of what she was seeing, straight from, you know, what she saw onto the page. And there was something very rough and raw about that, but actually very, very intimate, I thought. So I used those notes as a voiceover device. And yeah, she was taking notes. I mean, you know, I've worked a lot with journalists and she was doing the same thing that journalists do. You know, you walk around, you take notes, you talk to people, you write, you know, you write things down that you would have forgotten. Later on, you maybe improve upon those thoughts, scrub them out, add to them. But what I liked about, you know, the first draft was that this was straight from the pen, that, you know, from the experience to the pen to the page.
Well, let's have a listen then to that initial meditation on Zagorka and then the song that inspired A Chain of Keys.
Zagorka,
She carries two silver keys on a chain. She smells of the hills of her name. Its paths are in her forehead. The houses are all empty. Once a day, this is her walk with the keys on the chain. I would kill them with my own hands if I knew who was responsible. A circle that cannot break, but the wrong kind of circle, she says.
Chain of keys there in the film A Dog Called Money, and Seamus Murphy, director and writer, is with me. It's quite a collaboration between yourself and herself. She's a very private artist. I mean, I was astonished at quite the openness. There are different times in the film where you literally see her listening to different types of music in different cities, and you come into the studio where the album's been made, and they're mirror images of each other. It's very unusual for an artist to let you see that directly into
their heart. Especially her. Mm. I don't know where that came from, because, you know, she is a very private person. And, you know, I think she probably shocked everyone by saying, listen, let's do this, because it was her idea, you know, let's do this and let's do it in front of an audience. I was thinking about this recently, you know, maybe it was the fact that she was looking at other people's lives on the travels, and that's what produced this body of work and this inspiration. And maybe she felt, well, let's continue this and let's have this transparency, perhaps.
Yeah, well, tell me a little bit more about this audience that was present, because this was in Somerset House, wasn't it?
Somerset House, yeah, in January 2015. They were, you know, the recording was taking place each day, and there was an audience allowed in three times a day. To come and watch for 50 minutes, I think, a stint. And what happened was there was a very, very big room in a basement. And within that room, they built a structure that became the recording studio. But on the periphery of that structure, there was space for people to come in and look in. And they could come in and look in and see what was going on inside, and also hear them, because every musician and some of the technicians had microphones. But the people inside couldn't see what was happening outside. So there was a privacy inside that you didn't feel if you were outside looking in, which, you know, I went out a couple of times to film it. And it was a very different experience from being inside or outside.
And I guess for the people inside making the album, the important thing was that there was no sense of, oh, we have to perform, we have to get up to some performance level now for the audience outside. They could actually get on with the process of simply making it.
Well, exactly. And I think, you know, it was very much, you know, let's see what happens as we go along. I mean, it could have been, I think at one stage they were talking about maybe we should include the audience. Not audience participation, but let's refer to them. You know, let's be aware of them. And then I think very quickly it was, no, let's just ignore them. They're watching us and we're doing our thing. You know, let them be observers.
I mean, this is, I'm sure, a question that is often put to you as a photojournalist about that line, the fine line that you have to tread between, you know, using these images in some sort of exploitative or, you know, in a way that's not respectful to the people that you're taking pictures of. I want to listen to a clip in PJ Harvey. This is in Kosovo, and she's walking around one of those abandoned houses, and it's very interesting how she handles even being there.
My Nana, loads of those.
A handmade rotting wooden ladder, a corn store. These were country people. And I'm stepping on their things in my expensive leather sandals.
see a little fire. What's that? Is that for the heat to come up from below?
All that's left from the looting, strewn in the dust on the floor.
A clip there from Seamus Murphy's film A Dog Called Money. The fact that PJ Harvey within that, Seamus would refer to, you know, her posh leather sandals, there clearly was a great empathy, a great respect for the people that she was talking
yes,
about.
Yes, there was, and there was an awareness. I mean, it was important for me to leave that in the film, because I didn't have to put that in. That was one of the pieces from her notebooks that I extrapolated and got her to record. Because we are, looking at other people's lives and meeting people and telling their story. But that's what journalists do. You know, that's what we read the newspapers, we watch television, we go to see movies. You know, it's all about stories. And these are stories that, you know, this old woman, you know, it's a tragic story. She could so easily not have been recorded. In some way, her story is recorded. But Polly was sensitive enough to say, you know, here I am looking through these houses in my expensive leather sandals, and it's just a nice awareness of as you say that line that, and I think it's always a thing for anyone, journalists. I mean anyone really, you know, how you behave in those places is really up to you how you behave, and there is a line, and I think, you know, you should always be aware of it.
We get material from Afghanistan that you shot with PJ Harvey. You also get material from Kosovo. And there's some material that you had yourself from a previous visit to Syria. But then there's a whole raft of material from Washington and two very different Washingtons, East Side Washington and West Side Washington. Why was that so important? Was that something you discussed together?
Yes, we wanted to do something, you know, in the West, you know, the closer to home, but not England. And we thought that D.C. was going to be interesting because it is the centre of Western power. And yet there's another side to D.C., you know, and the more we looked into it, we both had been to D.C. She was actually in D.C. on 9/11. She was staying across the road from the Pentagon when it was bombed with her band. They were on tour. Mm. So she had a bit of a history there. And I'd been there working as a photographer at times. But there is this other side of D.C. And that was something that we thought was interesting, that the centre of Western power, you've got somewhere that's so close to the White House where people are actually struggling and you know, finding it very difficult to make a go of it. The other thing, of course, is that the people that are making decisions in Washington are also making decisions about the people in D.C. Sorry, in Kosovo and Afghanistan. So it's an interesting kind of power base.
And that specifically is one of the situations where we see, I think it's a Baptist church or a gospel house on the east side of Washington. And we hear the songs being sung there and they're directly reflected in the album itself.
Yes, yes. I mean, there was a choir there that I really thought that it would be great to get this wonderful gospel choir to sing some of her lyrics. And we'd been there together and we'd gone to a service. We got to know the people a little bit. And I came back 6 months later with this idea and ran it by them. I said, yeah, great. And in fact, in the film, you see the musical director. I literally handed him my phone. I said, look, this is the tune, you know, and he memorized it very quickly, worked out, you know, the arrangement almost for his choir. And in that room in the office, I recorded that was straight off. You know, they were reacting to it straight live. And then they went into the church and then they did that rendition of the chorus. And then I cut it with material of the whole church on a Sunday doing their gospel thing. So there was a combination. Trying to sort of make it, you know, both worlds colliding in a way.
One, two, three, four.
Here's the Hope 6 demolition project, stretching down to Benning Road. A well-known pathway of death, at least that's what I'm told. And here's the one sit-down restaurant in Ward 7, nice. Okay, now, this is just drug town, just zombies, but that's just life in the community of hope. The community of hope. The community of hope. The community of hope. Hope, hope, hope. Of hope.
We're gonna check it out.
So let me go back.
Community of hope. Community of hope, hope, hope.
What do we say? Hope.
Gonna put a woman here. Gonna put a woman here. Gonna put a woman here.
Gonna put a woman
here.
Gonna put a woman here.
Gonna put a woman here.
Journey of a Phrase there from just PJ Harvey on our guitar through to the gospel group rehearsing, then the performance on the Sunday at the particular ceremony, and then back to PJ Harvey herself where they're going to put a Walmart here. All that taken from the film, A Dog Called Money. It was Seamus Murphy, writer and director, who was speaking to us before that. Seamus is doing a Q&A in the Lighthouse tonight. There's a preview of the film happening there. It opens at selected cinemas nationwide this weekend, and we will be reviewing A Dog Called Money on Thursday night's arena.